Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Nate Bucati, while we're chasing Mike Boddicker, update us on the news about Sporting Kansas City when the season resumes and whether or not people will be able to watch it in person.
So the season is set to resume on August 21st for Sporting Kansas City. That would be an away game at Minnesota. What MLS has done here is release the next, I think, five games of their regular season, I guess you call it now. And so for Sporting Kansas City, it will start at Minnesota United on August 21st. Then the first home game would be August 25th against the Houston Dynamo. Basically, you're looking at playing a game every 3 to 4 days. Six games have been announced for Sporting Kansas City. They're all in the region. They're trying to keep the teams in their own geographic regions for this first phase of reopening the regular season. And yes, the plan that Sporting Kansas City is unveiling is that they will allow a small percentage of fans in the stands. I think it's 14% of capacity of Children's Mercy Park, which I believe equals out to about 2,500 fans. Jake Reed, the president of the team, spoke yesterday about that. He said that financially, this actually doesn't really make a lot of sense for the club because to go through all the expenses of opening the stadium and going through the security protocols and all of that to make it safe for 2,500 people, it's going to cost as much or more than they're going to make by letting fans come in. But they just want to allow as many fans as they think is safely possible to come into the stadium. They believe that's the number. They're going to have all of the concessions open through the entire concourse, even though there's only going to be 2,500 people there. That's so they can maintain social distancing when it comes to lines for the concession stands and all of that. They said they got protocols in place for avoiding bottlenecking coming into the stadium and exiting the stadium. You're actually literally going to be dismissed by row when this game is over, so that everybody doesn't just get up and rush out to the exits all at the same time. Mandatory mask wearing inside the stadium. So they're going to try to do this. And of course, everybody's got their own opinion on whether or not, you know, teams should be doing this or not. But that's what Sporting Kansas City's plan is going forward with that first home game on August 25th.
All right, let's go to our first guest of the show. Mike Boddicker joins us on the phone. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Good. Heading north.
You're going up to Iowa. What happened? What happened up in Iowa?
Well, straight line winds, 110 miles an hour.
The derecho. Gary Lezak told us about this yesterday.
That's what he called it.
Yeah,
the derecho. Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, and it hit dead on my hometown and Cedar Rapids and roofs tearing off. Trees gone, no power, no nothing. So I'm hauling up three generators, chainsaws, ice, everything. They don't have anything going on up there. So
I mean, Bod, my I have a buddy who lives in Omaha, and I think it hit there pretty good too. And he sent me a couple pictures. It looks like a tornado hit.
Yeah. Well, Category 2 or something like that. Hurricane force winds. And just tore everything apart. Holes in all the roofs are gone. My hometown, our church where I grew up and went to church, steeple's completely gone. Half the roof's gone.
Mm.
The fences, the bleachers for the baseball fields, torn apart. Trees all over the roads. I could be chainsawing for a few days, so.
Hopefully you could help out. And was everyone that you know safe up there?
Everyone's good. Everyone was very fortunate. Very fortunate. I know my wife's sister was heading back from her mom's place after taking care of her, and she ran right dead into it in her car. She said there was trees flying, and she said, "I can't believe I made it home," but she did and got in the basement. So.
That's the most important thing that everyone's.
It is.
That's what I tell
everybody. I know it's a pain in the rear, and they're probably 5 days out from insurance companies even looking at anything. But everybody's safe. I said, stuff can be replaced.
We have Mike Boudicker on the line. Mike, looking forward to this. Let's talk some baseball. The Royals turned things around.
I told they you. Didn't I tell you last time?
You're damn right you did.
I told
and they
you.
They swept the Twins. Mm-hmm. What's been the main factor here? We talked about this last week, that now that the rotation is solidified, there was a chance they could improve, but I did not anticipate them sweeping the Twins. Why have they been so much better this past week?
Well, I think a big part of it was having the rotation solidify and getting some stability there, and then it kind of backs off the bullpen a little bit. But I think Hunter Dozier getting back in the lineup really made a difference. I mean, that's one more peg into that lineup, and, it's baseball's funny that way. I mean, there's those ups and downs, that roller coaster thing where you're going to have some periods where the bad part about it is that 60-game stretch, it's kind of tough to have that 5-6-game losing streak. But it happens during the course of a year. But it can turn around in a hurry. You just need one little break, and you can win some ball games. And the Twins have got a good ball club, and we swept the Twins. So, and that's a good sign.
You know, Bud, I think your point about Hunter Dozier is a really good one. Steven and I talked about it a little bit because that's a position at first base that is supposed to be middle of the lineup run production, right?
And right. You haven't been getting it.
You haven't been getting anything out of that position.
No.
But other guys like Jorge Soler are starting to hit as well, and all of a sudden you look at it, and even the baseball nerd guys, the Pecota guys and all that, are saying that the Royals offense looks really good because of the way they're hitting for so much power.
Yeah. Well, it all starts with Witt. I mean, he's going to get on base. So if you've got some guys who can drive some runs in, and you throw Dozier into that mix, and you got Soler, Dozier, Salvi, I mean, that's a pretty good threesome right there where you can drive some runs in. And I think moving Mondesi down towards the bottom of the lineup helped a little bit. I mean, it made him relax a little bit so he can not push so hard up at the top of the order. So I think Matheny did a couple good things there. And like you said earlier, getting the starting pitching back that we needed, that made a huge difference too, a little stability.
Mike Boudicker is our guest. Mike, over the weekend we saw Brady Singer get his first win of his major league career, hopefully the first of many. And once again, he only goes five innings. Like to see him go deeper in the games, but he just continues to impress.
Yeah, he's consistent. I would like to see him go deeper in the games, throw a few less pitches, pitch to contact a little bit more. But overall, if you were told, hey, if I can get five innings out of Singer with just two runs or less and consistently, I think we'd have taken that, wouldn't you? Beginning of the year.
Mm-hmm.
From him and what we've seen from Chris Bubich.
Bubich, I told you he was going to have a better game. Remember the other day?
Mm-hmm.
I said he was going to do better.
He did exactly what you said, too. He didn't rely on his changeup.
Right. Exactly. He figured, they talk about that stuff. They look at stuff. And you have to understand, big league hitters are going to know what your strengths are. If you're going to pitch to your strengths, you better be really, really good. So
It's been really exciting to watch, not only for what's happening, in the past week, but when you have a longer term view of the Royals and their ability to rebuild a championship contender. This has all been focused. All the attention has been focused on these college pitchers that they've drafted, and in their efforts to build a championship quality rotation. I get it. There's going to be arm injuries. Not everyone pans out. We've been told that repeatedly because it's just fact. But, Lynch and Kowar and Lacy, They're all supposed to be better than these two.
Yeah, I know that.
Like these two aren't the best of the bunch. Now, who knows? I mean, it could happen where Brady Singer ends up being the best, and that wouldn't be. I mean,
that wouldn't
he
be
was
bad. Number
a first
one
round pick,
right? Yeah.
You know,
right.
But I'm just talking about projections and people that focus on the prospects. And we've heard a lot of, and you said that you liked Kowar the best
like
out of the bunch.
I like Kowar a lot.
A lot of people say Daniel Lynch. Now then, Asa Lacy's
really like Ace. Oh boy.
So, but doesn't this give you more hope? Looking at how good these two have been, like, oh boy, maybe the Royals hit the jackpot here with this starting pitchers.
I think they did a great job. I'm just hoping, where are our position players? That's what I want to see. Now, if we can see some position players step up and say, oh wow, this guy, he's got a good future ahead of him. He's a stud.
Pappy Witt Jr. Who said that?
Yeah, well, we need more than one. You know,
well,
that would help.
Oh man,
you got to have one to start your fun. Let's go.
That's right.
But you know what? As much as we were really beating up on Adalberto Mondesi at the beginning of the year, he got dropped in the order. You know, his production's kind of picked up a little bit. And if he can become, even if it's not the shortstop, if he can just become a guy that can hit, you can put him somewhere else because of his athleticism. But I want to, let's stick with the pitcher thing for a second. Who was the best between Hudson, Mulder, and Zito? And who was the best between Smoltz, Glavine, and Maddox?
Maddox?
To me, it was Maddox. And I think, I really like Zito. But Hudson was a stud. I think Hudson would be my pick when in their prime.
But those are kind of hard choices to make. I feel like on both teams' cases.
They're all Hall of Fame. I mean, look at the Braves. They're all Hall of Famers.
Right. And
right.
Yeah. I don't want to argue, but I would separate Maddox.
I mean, and
Maddox is the best out of the bunch. There was nobody as good as him out of that group.
He was incredible. I feel like some people, at least back in the day, maybe I'm wrong about this, but I feel like some people made the argument back in the day that when you got into the postseason, he wasn't as good as Glavine and Smoltz. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but either way, my overall point is I feel like it was kind of like from year to year with a lot of those guys. Well, this guy's having a better year this year, but they're all great, and I just wondered, do you think the Royals? I mean, gosh, it's calling a lot to say they're going to be Hall of Famers, but I'm just saying. Could it be the kind of thing where each one of us has a different opinion on which one of these guys is the best by the time they're all in the rotation?
That's a good thing to talk about, isn't it?
Yeah, it's fun, right?
It's really fun. And like I said, if you can get two out of the five and three would be a bonus, so all of a sudden you got a big three, that's pretty tough to beat a big three. If you got three stud pitchers, that's pretty hard. I mean, you can scratch some runs across the board. If they get it figured out and they're all top end, Dayton Moore said it, pitching is the currency of baseball. And he's right. I mean, if you got your pitching in order, and we saw that in 14-15 with the Royals. We didn't have the greatest, man, we have a pen. There was our pitching. I mean, you have to have the pitching in order to keep it there. And you can scratch some runs across. We proved that, too. But I still would like to see some of these young position players mature and step up. And I mean, we don't have a whole lot of young guys on this Royals team right now as far as position players. You look, I mean, Mondesi, Nicky Lopez, there's not a lot. The rest of the guys are 27, 28, 29. I mean, you're getting up there where you should be in your prime. And but next thing you know, it's going to be a couple years down the road, and they're not going to be in their prime anymore. So when these guys are all where we think these young pitchers should be, they're not going to be in their prime anymore. We need some young position players.
Let's. I like when we do this. Let's take a moment and and look back and appreciate Greg Maddux.
his postseason RA was a lot better than I thought it was.
In 13 years, in 35 appearances, including 30 starts, in 198 innings, his postseason ERA was 3.27, and his ERA in the World Series was 2.09.
Yeah.
John Smoltz, and that was better than Tom Glavine. Now, John Smoltz, his postseason numbers are even better than that.
Yeah.
But it's not like Maddux was going out there and getting rocked in the postseason. But let me – and the reason why I say we need to separate Maddux – 1992, okay. Oh, Mike, you're going to love this. 1992, 268 innings, 218 ERA. 93, 267 innings, 236 ERA. 94, 202 innings, 156 ERA. The next year, 209 innings, 163 ERA. Then it skyrocketed to 272 the next year. Then the 2 years after that, 220 and 222. The stretch from 1992 until 1998, good God, man.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Bod, but you always say that record is the most important stat for a pitcher, right?
Yeah.
He was 11-14 in the postseason. That's ridiculous. You can't say record's the most important when he pitched like that and had an 11-14 record.
They lost the game, didn't they?
That's not his fault.
Obviously it is if we lost 14 games.
See, I told you, Steven, sucked in the postseason. Greg Maddux.
Well, the Braves did not win as many championships as they should have with that rotation.
They didn't score runs and they made errors.
And it's amazing. Smoltz in the postseason was 15-4 with a 2.67 ERA.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean,
they were all great. I mean, Glavine was fabulous, too. But yeah,
you know, and when he was before he got Steve Avery wasn't bad, and he was just like hey, let's Steve Avery.
Yeah, he was a throw-in.
Yeah.
You also understand that the strike zone was a little bit different for those guys. They'd start with their command was so good and the movement was so good, they could start a ball right in the corner, and then the next one was just a half a ball off, and then they could just keep going further out, and the umpires would start giving it to them through the course of the game. They had a reputation.
Hey, Jake, do we have a Curtis Siebold sounder by any chance? Something that will give credit, that will alert people to give credit to Curtis Siebold for a non-angry tweet. If not.
Curtis is listening? What's wrong with him?
But Curtis tweeted out, I didn't want to do this, but to back up Nate's point, Curtis tweeted out yesterday that in the 12 games since he was dropped down in the order, Mondesi's slash line is 326, 356, 465.
Yep.
Curtis Siebold.
4 of 5 on stolen bases. Now, is this just, he started off so poorly, and now he's bouncing back, and no matter where he was in the lineup, he was going to turn things around? Or do you think there's something to taking pressure off of him, dropping him down in the lineup, and he can just relax and play?
I think it's taking the pressure off and dropping him down, and I give Matheny credit for that. He could have kept plugging him out there and plugging him out there, and I think we'd have seen pretty much the same stuff. He felt like he was on the base all the time. He felt like he had to do something to really jumpstart the offense at that point, and moving him down the order, there wasn't pressure to have to do that. And he could relax a little bit and maybe see the pitch better. Not so much pressure. And I think it really helped.
Well, I obviously I've fallen for small windows of Mondesi showing what he's capable of. Clearly, the athletic ability is there to produce. But baseball is a sport where it's doing it every day over a long period of time, and he still has to prove that. But I'm just suggesting that because the reason I brought him up was because we're talking about where the position players, and I think it's a very fair question. I mean, I think I'm very optimistic not only about the starting pitchers, but about these young bullpen arms too. And the thing that is good about Mondesi is with that athleticism, if he can hit, there's a lot of different places you can put him on the diamond if Bobby Witt Jr. is the shortstop of the future, right?
either that or Bobby Witt Jr. moves to third, because Bobby Witt Jr. is a pretty big fella. That's a possibility, too. Then you have a pretty solid left side.
Bobby Witt Jr.
it's fun to imagine what could happen. We still need to fill those spots, those other spots in the lineup and on the field. You got to produce. You got to have at least five guys that can produce. So, I don't know. We'll see how fast the pitchers mature and are ready, and you know, if we can hold on, if we can get going here in a year or so. You know, the guys are still in their prime, our hitters are still in their prime. But if it's 3 years down the road, it's going to be a little bit different look at a guy swinging the bats.
Well, if they're having, it could be like the reverse of what they did to help build the team. Well, they used the starting pitcher in Greinke for that big deal, but then, you know, Will Myers was one of their best hitting prospects. But they were able to turn him in to, you know, eventually, you know, acquiring James Shields and Wade Davis, which solidified the rotation and the bullpen.
They've shown
the willingness. If these pitching prospects continue to develop, and there's a high success rate, Dayton always says pitching's the currency of baseball. Well, then I don't think the Royals would hesitate at all if there was a gap in the offensive talent to make a deal, because they've shown when they were close they've done that in the past. And so either way, the more pitching prospects you develop and they're successful, the better it is, because Dayton Moore has shown he will flip that to get what he needs.
Yeah, we have to. And I still to this day, I think that Wade Davis, James Shields trade was one of the best things that ever happened to the Royals, because Shields came in and taught us how to win. Davis turned into probably the best closer in baseball for a few years and helped us win a World Series. So it was a great trade. Nobody wanted to get rid of Will Myers, obviously. I mean, young talent, could hit. But, man, I tell you, it turned this whole organization around, that trade.
And that was a trade that hurt. Will Myers for people, but they did it. And they may get to the point where it's going to hurt to trade one of these pitching prospects. But if you could fill out your baseball team and turn yourself into a contender and get what you need, that's what you're going to have to do.
Yeah.
And that's what the Royals have shown they're willing to do.
Yeah. Shields taught us how to win.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I mean, I was...
he taught us how to win, and that's what this club needed. We had the talent. We had that Greinke trade where we had the guys. We just need to learn how to win. And he came in and taught us how to win.
Hey, Bod.
That's the right way.
Is Josh Staumont, with the way he's pitched so far this season...
Pretty impressive. He comes in, pitches an inning, strikes out three every time. It's just pretty impressive.
I mean, are we on to something like those guys that were in the back of those 14, 15 bullpens? Is it too early to say that about Staumont, or do you see it there?
It's still a little early, but, man, he's looked good. He really has.
Nate, will you calm down?
No.
Well, he's excited.
I want to be excited.
After 2 weeks, will you not compare them to the 14, 15 bullpen? After 2 weeks, did you not learn your lesson?
No.
Trust me, you will never see a bullpen like that again.
That's arguably one of the greatest bullpens in baseball history.
No, it is the greatest bullpen.
But did any of us know in the early stages that those guys were going to be as dominant? I mean, did any of us know that Greg Holland was going to be at the time the best closer in the history of the franchise, according to some?
Could he still turn out to be really good and not be part of the greatest bullpen in baseball history?
Yeah, he could. I'm just asking if he could be one of those pieces that's... I'm not saying that he's going to be as good as that whole bullpen, but can he be one of those pieces as good as some of those guys that were in that bullpen? I mean, he's throwing 101 miles an hour and striking people out at a ridiculous rate.
He could easily be a piece, but, I mean, you look down that bullpen with Hochaver and Holland and Davis, I'm going, man, it was... From the fifth inning on, it was over, and everybody knew it. I've never seen a team where everybody knew. You could see the other guys. If the Royals had a lead after the fifth inning, heads dropped in the other dugout. It was like, it's over.
Well, I mean, that's what made that bullpen so incredible was it wasn't just one guy. They had like five of them.
They had five guys. Five guys at any time could come in and do, basically shut everything down. That was it. Done. Over. That was amazing. That's the best
Davis,
one. I don't think you're ever going to see a bullpen like that again, ever.
Wade Davis' ERA in 2014 was 1, and then 2015 was 0.94. I mean,
yeah.
That's all. I appreciate your enthusiasm, but that's the most rarefied area.
If you could find, four other guys that could fit the bill, but I mean, like I said, I don't think you're ever going to see a bullpen that good again, ever. I mean, it can be good, but I don't think you'll ever see one like that again.
Look, and it's only 7 games. I fully understand it's only 7 games, but so far Staumont's ERA is 1.17. He has struck out 14 batters in 7 2/3 innings, and he's made them look terrible in doing it. Like, when you watch his strikeouts, they're eye-popping.
Yeah.
I don't know if he can keep that up. I'm asking you as our pitching expert.
I tell you what, as far as I can see, I don't see any hiccups in the delivery. I don't see any issues. As long as he can command that fastball, it's going to be tough. I mean, hitters are going to have a tough time hitting it. You're not going to see a whole lot of solid contact.
Jake likes his hair. What do you think of his hair?
The man bun?
Do you know how good you would have looked with a man bun back in your Orioles days?
Real good.
No.
Absolutely.
I'm not into man buns.
You would have been, but you should have been, is my point.
Right, you would have
looked... Like, you fantastic.
Like, who's into underwear, Mike? You are. I mean, look what you modeled for underwear.
Well, I did not.
You were asked to.
But you were in the conversation.
Right. You were being discussed.
Look, they didn't just pull your name out of a hat. There had to be a reason why you were in consideration to take over for Jim Palmer as the jockey underwear guy. All right?
Yeah.
Let's stop right here.
You're a good-looking guy.
We just gloss over that too many times on this show.
Yes.
Exactly. Well, tell me how that came about.
I'm not. That's slaughter over the dam.
That's not.
No.
Okay, so who approached you? Did Jim Palmer approach you? Did, like, a talent scout approach you? They liked your gaits? They liked your features? Like, what was the...
The legal team of jockey or something?
Right. Like, who contacted you?
Some guy from there. That's not my cup of tea. It was never going to happen.
I understand that, but who... Are you sure... First of all, are you sure it was a guy from jockey underwear, or was it just, like, a super fan that was trying to get his hooks in?
Palmer told me.
Okay, so Palmer told you and said, I'm done doing these underwear ads, and they're looking for somebody else. Did he recommend you, or did they just like the looks
of you? I have no idea. I right off the bat said no.
So you didn't even consider it?
Nope.
Did you hear what the money was?
Didn't matter. When are you going to do it?
Was there was not a price tag that they could have got to get you to pose in underwear for magazine ads?
No. You see me every Wednesday now. Can you imagine? Ugh.
Yeah.
No.
Did the wife like you're extra income? She wasn't like you need to go model?
Nope.
Like, we got all these kids, Mike, you need to go model.
Nope. It was never gonna happen.
Who else did they approach?
It seems so close minded.
Everybody's got a price.
I'm fascinated by this.
I don't. You know me, Jake.
Yeah, I still think you got a price.
No, I
think
don't.
It's just really high.
No.
$50 million.
No.
Whatever, dude. You're taking pictures with underwear on for $50 million.
No.
Yeah, you are.
No.
I'm sorry. $50 million, Mike.
No.
Think of all the good things you could do in the world with that money.
Uh-huh. I'd do it for $50,000.
People will pay you $50,000 not to do it, though.
Yeah, but no, exactly. I might do it for $50 if someone asks me.
I'd do it
depends on who's asking, really.
Do it for a Hamilton. Yeah.
Right. No, never going to happen. Yeah. So
there's never a moment in your life.
No.
You've looked back with regret at that decision.
No. None.
I don't like it when you're this close-minded.
You know me.
If I would have been in your life back then, I would have advised you to take the deal.
Now, right. You could advise me you're blue in the face. It wasn't going to happen.
Why don't you say something?
Didn't want to look at that. In our defense here. I had enough looking at my baseball cards. I did not want to see that.
I'm still trying to picture Bob with a man bun.
No.
Oh. All of it.
That was never going to happen either. No.
I'm disappointed.
Limiting, it seems like you're limiting yourself, Bob. That's all I'm saying. You know, you're limiting yourself.
Here's the whole story, Nate. I am me, and that's it.
That, you know what? I accept that. That's a good enough answer for me. I got no rebuttal for that.
The text line weighs in. They said your price. Would you do it for a bag of doorknobs and a ham sandwich?
That's good.
I do like ham sandwiches.
I know you do.
Yeah. No.
That's pretty good.
There was nothing that could ever get me there. So,
Mike Boddicker, not a former underwear model, is our guest. Mike, I've been impressed with Scott Barlow. He came in for the save over the weekend because Rosenthal was unavailable.
Right.
And remember that extra inning win, I think the Royals' first win of the year, wasn't it? That they were able to get when he got out of that tough ninth inning jam. He's looked pretty good.
There's been times when guys come in and you're going, wow, I can see what the Royals see on these guys. Then there's other times they come out and you're going, what the heck happened? That's you just got to be consistent, you know. And everything goes back to that 14-15 bullpen. Those guys, every day, it was just shut down every day. And I guess my expectations are way too high. What I want to see after that, but they have some nice pieces down there. I really Stalmont has been really very impressive. I watch some of these bullpen guys, and they get themselves in jams. They walk people. I mean, they walk the leadoff guy, and you know, yeah, they did a nice job. They, you know, he left two runners on. Well, he put those two runners on with walks. They're living. You can't live that dangerously. You can't walk people when you come into games in the bullpen. And there's other times they look great, but too many walks for me.
Now, can I read a funny text message, Nate, that maybe
you're going to anyway?
That's all in good fun. Without you getting mad.
No, you'll
laugh,
get
Mike.
Mad.
I think it's going to be funny. Jake will like this one. Okay, this is. It says ask Nate, so this is what I'm trying to.
Yeah, go ahead and ask me.
It says Michael Franco is looking pretty good at third base. Can you ask Nate if he thinks he's the next George Brett, or is it too early to tell? That's funny. That's someone listening to the show and trying to give good input.
Yeah.
My answer to that is no, it's not too early to tell. He is not the next George Brett.
There it is.
I've already made my decision on that. He's got 2,400 at bats at the major league level with a .250 batting average. He is not the next George Brett. Next question.
Hey, welcome back to the show, Stephen St. John and Negative Nancy.
How dare you, sir?
But Mike Boddicker,
you guys
on
watch
that topic,
when Josh Stalmont becomes a stud with striking people out left and right this entire season. I'm going to call back to this day.
Good.
How about that?
I hope you're right. Michael, and look, he could be really good, but maybe never reaches the level of, you know, Dennis Eckersley in 1990.
No, nope. Yeah. Know. It's going to be better. Eckersley can never throw 100 miles an hour.
Michael Franco is a signing that I loved. It was very low risk, and you see the reward right now. He's provided a power bat in the lineup. I like him a lot. And there was at one time quite a bit of hype around him when he was a Phillies prospect. I really like what he's brought to the Royals lineup. That's a signing that Dayton Moore should get a lot of credit for. What have you thought of Michael Franco so far, Mike?
Struggled early, but he takes a big swing, kind of like Soler. I mean, not surprising that he's a power guy. But he's getting better with the contact. Early on, contact wasn't there. He hasn't been that there, making the plays. So that was a good signing. Very good. Low risk. I need to see more. The sample size that we have on some of these guys are just so small. And Nate talked about it. You want to see it day in and day out, consistent. Let's see more of it. Let's see more of him and see where he stands. People get all excited. Somebody has a really good week.
Oh yeah.
A really good
week is even more important in a 60-game season.
Right now, yep. I'm looking at the long haul, and what you can expect, what you're going to get.
That's right.
We've seen Whit Merrifield. We know what he can do, what he's going to do. Consistent, really good at bats. Yeah, he might take an over, but there might be two line drives at somebody in that over. He's consistent, day in, day out. Over the course of a year, over the course of 2 years, 3 years, you know what you're going to get with Whit, and that's good. I have to see some of these kids to actually say, yeah, I mean, he's looks good right now. You know, there's good things you see, but you got to see it over a long period of time.
Hey, Mike, before we let you go, tonight at 5:40 Central, the Royals will be playing in Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati against the Reds. Chris Bubich on the mound against Luis Castillo, one of the pitchers I really enjoy watching perform on the mound. And so that should be an interesting pitching matchup. But Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati, what about Chris Bubich making a start there?
He better have a good changeup.
Keep it low and away.
That ball just jumps out of there, and it's small. You got to see your old pal, Moose.
Moustaka. Mike, yeah. Moustaka. Oh, yeah. I love Moose.
Isn't he on the injured list?
Well, you might get to see him in the dugout.
Yeah, we get to see him.
Just get to see him. It makes Salvi real happy to see his old pal.
My Moustaka.
He got put on the 10-day IL yesterday.
Bruise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a left quad bruise.
My Moustaka.
Yeah. He was doing pretty well, too.
How about this? Let me one-up you there, then. With Moustakas on the shelf, it's likely to be a combination of Kyle Farmer and Christian Colon.
World Series hero.
Yeah. No matter what you say about Colon, he was a hero.
All right, so Moose is out. We see Christian Colon maybe at second base. Come on!
That would be fine, because I think Bubich will eat him up, but that's just me.
Hey, have a safe trip to Iowa, and hopefully everything's okay up there. We're glad all of your friends and family are safe, and so hopefully the damage isn't too bad, but give all our best wishes to the good people up in Iowa.
Will do. I appreciate it, guys.
Thank you, Mike. That's Mike Boddicker. That's good. He could have been a great model, I think.
Could have been.
Could have been. We will be right back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Count remains 1-2. The go-ahead run at third. The pitch and a breaking ball lined into left field. That's a base hit. Colon has driven in the go-ahead run. Dyson has scored. And the Royals have a 3-2 lead here in the 12th inning.